Welcome, Photon Warriors. Commence strategic maneuvers at audible command signal. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, begin.
Jackalope Radio presents Movies Hate You. Movies Hate You, with your host, Rob Housechild.
And welcome to Movies Hate You. That's emphasis on the you. Where's an emphasis on the movies? Which one is it, Todd?
I don't know. I think it's an emphasis on love.
No, I think this is a show about love.
That's right.
Movies Hate You, a show about love. That's the subhead. Because we love movies and they hate us.
Exactly.
And why do they hate us, Todd?
Well, it's the fact that, you know, we love them so much and we watch them all. And man, some of them really seem to take a lot of really dark, devious pleasure in causing us pain.
They're made specifically to torture us.
I think you're right.
I think that's okay, though.
True.
I think the trick is, the way to win, and this is for everyone, learn to love the garbage. Or learn to love it. I mean, not just, oh yeah, I like a bad movie, yeah, sci-fi channel movie, yeah, I flipped through and I stopped and watched Sharkatopolis or whatever versus Megaglopolis. But no, to actually love these movies, get to know them, know who's in them, know who makes them, and really love them. That's the best revenge.
I agree.
Or it's ignorance is bliss. I don't know. It's one or the other. I want to start the show talking about another one of your movies. I think that I might talk about your movies, Todd, at the start of every show until you stop me. Because I think you're underappreciated as a filmmaker and producer and all-around one-man band. And tell me about this movie, The Shivers, that you made. Is that out on DVD?
Not on DVD. Last release was an orange video cassette. Our good buddies at Pop Cinema put that out back in the day. And honestly, I would really like to put it out on DVD. What I would basically need is I'd need them to send me my masters back, which I think it's about time anyway. I think it's actually about up. The license I had is up on that. So they need to send those back. And then what I'll do is I'll take them through the Betacam SP masters, digitize them and fix them up and clean them up and put them back on DVD.
Awesome, dude. What, give me a little bit of plot here. The covers, electrified chainsaw, is that for real?
I don't even understand that at all, and that's one of my only complaints, because I love Pop Cinema, but I've always been kind of like, what the hell is on the cover of my movies? The Zombie Bloodbath Trilogy, for instance, I had a really pretty cool cover, and now I don't know what that is, but they wrote it like a tool shed, you know, this wood plank looking writing, and I don't even understand that. And so then The Shivers is kind of the same way. This is some guy stock photo that they had of a dude with a chainsaw. We do have Chainsaw Mayhem in the movie, and I have pictures of the guy that's in the movie with a bloody chainsaw, so I don't know what happened there, but it's all about selling the product. I understand that, so I can't be too, you know, too irritated by it because of the fact that I love Mike and the fact that they took the movies when, you know, I needed them distributed and they gave a damn enough to do it. But yeah, the marketing's really weird. The movie itself is kind of like a cross between H.G. Lewis and, of all things, H.P. Lovecraft.
Mm.
It was a very strange marriage.
Sounds like a good marriage to me.
It was. It was a lot of fun. And we did some things. Again, we were pushing the boundaries of what was available to us at the time, technology-wise. We were really pushing the boundaries. I tell you what, there are some things in that movie I absolutely adore. I mean, the lighting, I'm really proud of the lighting. I'm pleased as hell with it. I'm very, very happy with the way some of the scenes played out. I really like the music. It's got atmosphere, and I was it was kind of a in addition to the Lovecraft and Lewis connection, it also was an homage to Fulci and The Beyond and things that he had done, because I lit it very much like a Fulci film. You got a lot of that dark blue stuff, like House by the Cemetery was a main influence on some of that lighting. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Three great influences.
And, yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
You know, Electrified Chainsaw on the cover. Yeah. That would sell me. If I saw that in a store, I would buy it. I mean, but it doesn't sound like the cover is doing the movie justice.
Well, and it's got some really hardcore stuff in it, man. We push the boundaries of gore in that movie. I mean, some lady cuts her own placenta out and tears into it and eats the thing, and it just...
That's good for you, though.
Oh, it was gnarly, man.
But good for you, right? Isn't that? I mean, there's. You know,
I enjoyed. People do that. You know, I enjoyed grossing people out. You know, that's the whole key.
So, a new century of insanity is not your tagline. That's it's on the box here.
Yeah, I don't really know what that is, but I, you know, again, I can't complain because they put it out there and they.
I'll tell you what it was. Yeah. It was released. The VHS. Was released March 1st, 2000. So there you go, a little bit of marketing. Let's cash in on the new millennium horror or fear or relief because it's March and we're not dead, right? It's 2000, new century of insanity. That means for the next 100 years, insanity brought to you by Todd Sheets. I like this, man.
Something like that. It was,
You can get a used... All right, actually, you can get a new VHS on Amazon of that for $20 if you can't wait for Todd to get it back out there on DVD somewhere.
I think it's going to be real nice. The thing I urge everyone to do at this point is just to wait a little while because we've got these beautiful... I mean, when I remaster this stuff, man, it's like night and day. And I'm also, in some ways, like when I remastered some of the older stuff, I know I've mentioned it before, but I had these people that were kind of producing it that were kind of unscrupulous, and they took it and released the stuff before it was ready. The original Zombie Bloodbath was released with a temp score. I mean, it was horrifying. And it wasn't even a final edit. It was kind of rough and had... I mean, I put all the gore in and then I wanted to see which parts I liked and trim it back a little. And so then I get people saying, yeah, it's a 40 minutes of gore. Hey, there's Pete calling in.
Oh, all right.
Looky there.
Mike, I thought he was sleeping.
Hell, you never know. That's
he was still hungover from Wasteland.
Yeah, I think so. Hey, Mr. Pete.
I am not hungover. Mr. Pete. I am not hungover. And you know something, Rob? You don't even know this, that Todd called in right before my panel when everybody was there, and he got razzed horribly that they want him at Wasteland. The fans rabidly want Todd Sheets to return to Cinema Wasteland. This was no BS, and Todd, you know I ain't lying. You heard it. You heard the accolades. So
yeah.
Let's do a Todd Sheets movie marathon at the next Wasteland. It starts at 11 p.m. and ends at 7 in the morning. All Todd Sheets movies. If you make it to the end, there's a prize, and we have to decide what that is.
That's
Zombie
funny.
Bloodbath trilogy.
No, it's something more than a DVD. I mean, that's great prize, but something like a date with Todd or something.
Oh, hell no.
Something, you know, or a date with Pete.
Date with me would work, but, you know... date with Todd. Todd's already spoken for.
Yeah.
Pete, what everybody wants to know is we need a Cinema Wasteland report.
Cinema Wasteland report. Well, okay. It was a great show, regardless of any snags, because, like we said, certain people just didn't show up, and I'm not going to mention their name on the air because I refuse to give them any press. But
celebrities, you mean? Celebrities?
Yeah, celebrities, yeah. But the whole Hennenlotter crew
was there. I was
going
to say,
dude,
I tried.
the whole Hennenlotter crew was there. James the Rich, Charlotte Kemp, John Cagliano. John Caglione, rather. It was just an incredible, incredible show. Probably one of the best. And there was, you know, several panels. Now, they showed Basket Case at 6:15, and there was a Basket Case panel after that.
Nice.
And they showed Frankenhooker the next day. There was a Frankenhooker panel after that. Friday night was, you know, your usual insanity, you know, the rush at the table and things. And I wound up getting as, you know, drunk and hungover shit, you know, that happened. So, yes, I got crocked. And Saturday, I had, now this was a first also. We had Mr. Insanity, Toby Klein, world famous deathmatch wrestler, do commentary over matches he selected. And we had a packed house, standing room only, in that room.
Nice.
It was incredible. And for me, the highlight of it was when his little 14-month-old son crawled under the table we were sitting at and doing the commentary and shit his pants. So
hey.
That was a highlight. And it just worked out so well that, you know, I'm considering trying to hook something up again with somebody. You know, ideally, I'd like to get somebody else like Toby. So maybe work that out. And my panel with Ginger Lynn and Art Ettinger was off the hook. Ginger is a sweetheart. We had met, you know, quite a few years ago. I showed her a couple pictures, you know, because she didn't remember. And, you know, we were talking and stuff. And we sort of reconnected over that thing. And the panel was great. And I had sat down with her, you know, the night before. And I said, look, is there anything, you know, you don't want to talk about, you know, considering, you know, who she is? And it was only two things, which I'm not going to mention here. But she did talk about the Tracy Lord situation in depth and put that all to rest. So it was just really a wonderful, wonderful panel. And our Saturday night, 20th anniversary of Saturday Night at the Movies with Ghastly Ghoul, was a complete train wreck as usual. And worse than before. It was just incredible. And my 42 questions, Ghastly had picked out all these, like, you know, little visual aids for this whole thing, which I wasn't allowed to see. And I actually spit my teeth out on one of them. I had to walk off and just, like, crack up in the corner. And we also, and
I was so frustrated because yesterday and today during the early part of the day, our server was running so slow. It was unbelievable, Pete.
It's Pete's fault.
It is.
You actually think that this live insanity is generating a bigger audience now?
Well, I think it is. I think it's because you're putting it out there. People are into it. You know, we were putting it out there. We were promoting it on our end. And I think it just, people are, I think they listen because it's almost like you say, it's like watching the Jerry Springer show or something, man. Anything can happen at any time. Unscripted, though, which is different than the Jerry Springer show, but it's unscripted.
Of course, I don't pre-plan any of this stuff. I mean, my thing was like at Horror Realm and also Cinema Oasis. I really wasn't going to do a live show. Then I said, you know something? Why not? Let's take another shot.
Yep, yep.
So we did it, and it was cool. It worked. So, you know, we've given, you know, our listeners a little insight to what it was like at Horror Realm and now what it was like at Wasteland. And, you know, it's unfortunately I couldn't get too many celebrities over, but you got some Wasteland regulars, some people who live and breathe the show, which is great. You had the zombie cheerleader on. You know, we had a reformed heroin addict on. We had some kind of pedophile, you know, moron on. So,
oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah, it was one of them. And, you know, of course, the Asian chick did show up and some really horrendous pastels and crushed a few cans for the fans. Kevin Van Hetrick from Basket Case, I had him for a little bit. I think I had Beverly Bonner for a little bit.
I was going to ask you while you're there. Thanks. I forgot. I really wanted to get the main man, you know, Mr. Frankenhooker. I wanted to get him, James Lawrence. I wanted to try to hook him up to be on the show.
I didn't get a chance to talk to him, to be honest with you. I was, like, a little bit busy, and, you know, being that I had the whole thing going on with, you know, Toby and the panels, and my friends were out from California with me, so a little distracted, but, you know, I got a few surprises for the fans on my show coming down the road, so.
Good. Well, okay. I know Frank Hennelotter is a sweetheart. He's a really nice guy.
Oh, he's
and
great.
I'm sure if you emailed him, he could put you in touch with anybody to get on your show, man. And so anybody who's listening who doesn't know, we're talking about Cinema Wasteland, which is held twice a year in Strongville, Ohio. And 42nd Street Pete is with us. And most people probably know you from this station, right, Pete? But what if they don't? What if they're just listening to my show and not yours? You know, they have to know the legend. So I just wanted to set that up. And also, Todd, I totally forgot – we are Movies Hate You and sponsored by bmovie.com. I didn't give them their plug earlier, and I'm going to be deducted a few pennies from my bmovie salary for that. But speaking of which, Pete, I have a movie here that bmovie.com sent me, and I have not watched it yet, but I will. And it's called Rap Sucks, as in rap music, not as in wrapping paper. And that is directed by someone you know, Beelzebub.
It's a new one?
It's a new one called Rap Sucks. I guess he's going against the hip-hop industry here, perhaps. Perhaps.
Oh, I could dig that. He, you know something? His movie that he premiered up at Wasteland, which I'm – okay, you know, I had
to – Was that Ant Farm D-Hole?
Yeah, Ant Farm D-Hole. Yeah, Ant Farm D-Hole was standing room only, and people were buying it and watching it in their rooms. So
that is apparently it's the sickest film he's ever made, and the quote on the box for that is you know, the most WTF moments of any film ever made. And I don't know who the quote's attributed to, but I just read that quote. Yeah, that's also on bmovie.com, where you can find all your needs for viewing entertainment and depravity. And also, somebody asked me – oh, go ahead.
If you're doing shameless plugs, can I plug something?
Yes.
Okay, well
– that's what this show is for.
Okay. The higher-ups at After Hours Cinema have decided to put my entire line on sale, unbeknownst to me, and – but for the fans, you know, I agree with this thing because, you know, the economy is bad and a lot of people, you know, can't afford to go $29.95 and $19.95. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people who run alternative cinema and after hours cinema understand that and have agreed to, and I believe this is going to run until the end of the year. Any of my $29.99, $27.99 titles will be $19.99, and the $19.99 titles will be $12.99. So you can really stock up on, you know, if you're looking at something, you were like, well, I don't know, and this and that and the other thing. And basically, I did the same sale up at Wasteland, $20 a pop. So it's a great opportunity to, you know, check my stuff out. I have at least, at least 20 releases, you know, in that company and, you know, always working on something else. So, yeah, it's worth a look, and you're going to save a lot of money. So go to afterhourscinema.com, alternativecinema.com, and, you know, go shopping.
Dude, seriously, that's a good break because usually websites, they're like, oh, well, the retail is $19.99. You can have it for $17.99. I mean, you're talking like $8 off your retail price. I mean, that's cool. That's really like cool,
ten,
man.
Ten in some cases.
Ten, you know, on some of them. I think that your whole collection should be put together, and if they get through the Todd Sheets Overnight Film Festival at the next Wasteland, they get your whole collection of film. That's a prize.
Well, you know, as far as new releases went, my Extreme Bondage collection and Extreme Sleaze 3, like, were neck and neck. And, you know, once they saw that Todd Sheets midget, you know, tribute was on the Extreme Sleaze 3, it flew off the shelf. It was amazing. So, Todd, you can sell a lot of DVDs up here.
That's not the one Todd's in that you showed me, right?
No, he's not in it per se. Oh. It's just dedicated to him because of his love of the little people.
Oh, Lord.
You know, the other thing I had a couple of people ask me is, do you have a website or a email address? And we do actually have an email address here. It's movieshateyou@gmail.com. So if you want to send hate mail or love mail or your movies or your, you know, whatever screeners for us to look at, we'll check it out.
Movieshateyou@gmail.com. I have websites, but we never do anything with them. That's the thing. Yeah.
What do you mean?
I have a website through Todd, 42nd Street Pete Forever, that I haven't done anything with. And I also have one, you know, the other one, just 42nd Street Pete. But
that's still up there, though, the 42nd Street Pete Forever. Yeah.
But the whole point is I have to do something with that in order to, like, maybe turn a buck here and there. So I got to work on that because it's like, you know, this is the last convention I'm doing for the year. And I have stock left over, and I'm going to do some stuff.
So. Oh, there you go.
The holidays are coming. You know, money's tight, and I have some stuff I can sell for a ridiculously low price. So I figure why not?
Nice. How'd that new female wrestling DVD do over there in Wasteland?
I had the sign up behind me. It helped that Toby was there. I sold, you know, quite a few.
Nice, man. Nice. Yeah.
So it worked out.
I like that.
I guess releasing, you know, pre-advanced sale, you know, give fans a few things. So
as far as fandom, and I have you know Peter Gutierrez, right?
Yes.
Yeah, right. I've got him coming on. He's doing another a short horror film festival. I've got him coming on in about 6 minutes. So I'm gonna bring him on just to give you a forewarning.
Okay.
What is the – there's a lot of
– I can hang up. It doesn't –
it's not about hanging up. I just want to bring him on and talk about what he's doing. No, you're welcome to stay on, man. You're welcome to stay on. I'm just going to interview him, and I want to hear what he's got going on. Because
I don't want to stay on too long, though, because I have house guests, you know. And they're...
Oh, okay. Well, listen, if you want to, you know,
take a bow. I'll stay on for that. I'll stay on for a bit.
Why don't we spend the next 5 minutes working it out of what we're going to do?
Awesome. Live on the air. There we go.
Yeah. It chews up time. You know?
Cut that out, please. Cut that out, Todd, please.
Don't tell him to cut that out, because last show he said he was going to cut stuff out, and he didn't.
What are you talking about? What didn't I cut?
Todd, don't cut that out. Todd, don't cut any of it.
I dropped an F-bomb last show, and you left it in.
I didn't leave it on the live part, though, did I?
Yes, you did.
Oh, did I?
Yep.
Damn. I made
Is that why
versions.
I got a ticket in the mail?
Yeah.
Is that why I got a ticket from the ICC?
You wouldn't have the ticket. I would have the fine of like $5,000 from the FCC, so at least no one heard that part.
But now if they're listening,
I got it off the actually, yeah, it was running live, so if you got it in the archives, I would seriously consider going in and taking out that filthy thing. Yeah.
Well, no, because honestly, the archives, I don't mind them being uncut. It's just the live one that I had to worry about.
Yeah. Well, you let it slip again, so.
Let me go back to my question, Pete. My question is about you go to a lot of shows. You're out there. You're with the fans. You're meeting the fans face-to-face. A lot of us don't get the chance to do that all the time. What is the temperature out there of people? Are people spending money, or are they just paying their $20 to get in these shows and walk around and gawk at celebrities who have passed their prime, perhaps? What is the what is it about people opening the wallet? Like, what is it, as far as from a business point of view, being in the low-budget independent movie and otherwise business? Is it worth it?
Well, at Wasteland, I was off a lot from what I had done prior to that, but I had a lot bigger and better inventory then, so I can't, say one way or the other as far as that goes. People were buying. I did, I did a satisfactory level business, I felt,
Okay.
So I was also walking away from my table a lot because I had William Forsythe right across from me, and I kept going over to bullshit with him and bullshit with Kyra, so doing
that. Cut those out, Todd. Cut those out. He just used bad words again.
Can't say bullshit? Oh, wow.
No shit. I can't say it.
Getting my feelings hurt here. But anyway, no. What it is? I was more in a social mood. I had Frank was behind me, talking to a bunch of people. I looked at, Charlotte Kemp's big fake boobies, for a while. So I was entertained.
What was the VHS collecting quotient up there? And we have some listeners who are into
there was a lot. I am amazed. Yeah. I am amazed at this whole VHS, comeback phenomenon.
Yeah, I know. It's going.
I'm not on the cusp of this, but Pop Cinema had this basement box thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Henrique Coutu was up there selling them.
Yeah,
and I saw a lot of people walking around with that in their hands. So
that thing is doing incredibly well for them. After speaking to Pop Cinema Camp Video, they said it's exceeding their expectations, and they took a chance on something really cool, and the fans responding to it, man.
Yeah, it's about time because they like I said, a lot of people in this business, have had a lot of, going on hard times, I'm with them, it affects me what happens because my stuff doesn't get a, push because, I'm not like I'm going to find my stuff on mom and pop stores. But yeah, I saw a lot of that big box stuff. There was another one guy up there who made a movie called 555.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. He had a bunch of VHS he was blowing out and everybody was walking around with them too. So it's just like, who would have thought,
Everything comes full circle. So that's a note to movie companies. Put your stuff on VHS for the fans. Put the right stuff on VHS for the fans, and you'll reap the benefits.
Well, it's funny, but it's probably more cost prohibitive to do VHS now than DVD when you think of it. Because we're both in the business. We both know what it costs to replicate, manufacture, and pump out one DVD after you've spent all the money editing and, doing all this stuff.
Right.
So, of course, we can't say that on the air, but the bottom line...
Two cents. You got to get it done in India. It's 2 cents per DVD.
It's 2 cents in India, and you've killed 10 people doing it because of the pollution. So
what, man? That's why you get dollar DVDs at the local convenience store, because somebody's hands are burning with plastic.
Yeah, but see, when you do the whole, tape thing per se, you need... your box, your insert, because everything's going to be in a big box, obviously.
Yeah, Yeah, it's going to be more expensive. I can tell you right now.
I'm going back to when we were buying them in bulk, going back, you know, when I was working for New York City Liquidators, we would pay $1.50, $1.75. That's when it was still viable, and you could still, you know, wholesale it for $3.54. But, you know, I figure everybody was paying the same for the damn tape because, you know, they used to have commercial grades A, B, and C. Of course, you know what the porn guys used, C.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you know, when you got a market like that where everybody has to basically pay really close to the same for raw materials, you got a lot more control over the market than you do now. Where you could keep the price, you know, where these guys, you know how DVDs are, everybody gets cutthroated on them, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it's, you know, everyone along the line's taking a little nibble, and by the time it gets back to the filmmaker, it's tough, and the filmmaker needs all those little fish on the line to help them get distribution. I mean, you could sell your movie yourself on your website, and you sell 30 or 40 a year, but, you know, if you want to get exposure, and I think most filmmakers know that, you know, you're going to take a few hits. Yeah. To get your stuff out there and get noticed, and if your stuff, you know, hits the right market, or you've done the right thing, or whether it's good or bad or whatever, it'll find its audience somewhere. Pete, I'm going to cut you off though because I'm going to bring the other Pete. I'm going to bring the other Pete in. You're welcome to stay on, or you can go back to relaxing. Can we bring in Peter Gutierrez, Todd?
We can. Let's go to break.
Okay, let's take a break.
All right, very nice. Let me bring in Peter.
I'll talk to you later on the week about whatever we're going to do this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, me?
No, well, you're going away, right?
I am. I'm leaving on Wednesday.
This Wednesday?
This Wednesday, and I'll be back on the 15th.
Okay. Right in time for the Walking Dead premiere.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I talked. Pete here?
Peter? I see him.
Hello, good evening.
Peter.
Yes.
Hi, how are you? Todd, are we? We're still on break, right?
Yeah, but I'm going to come back in 3, 2, 1.
All right, we are back. Movies Hate You, a show about love and hate and, I don't know, the in-between. I have another guest with me, and it's someone I know personally, someone I've worked with. I'm gonna really set you up, man. I'm gonna really go here. The horror genre, and stop me if I'm wrong, Peter, but the horror genre has a lot of unsung heroes. And I mean, people behind the scenes who you never see, you never read about, you never hear, and you'll never, know, because they're not a celebrity, they're not a star, they're not a director. Everybody gravitates toward the cream of a production. But there are hundreds of people behind the scenes who love the genre and bust their hump to make sure you know about what's going on or just doing right for the genre. And Peter Gutierrez, my good friend, is one of those people. He's a writer for Room Morgue magazine and a bunch of other places. He can give us a bio. I'm not going to read the list here. He's here to talk about a new short film festival he's doing here in New York City called Daggers. And this is the second time he's doing it. This is the sequel, follow-up. Is it Daggers 2, Peter?
I think it's technically Daggers 3.
Daggers 3, okay. Well,
Daggers 4. Daggers, I think I had my own private one last year in my basement.
That doesn't count.
Well, it counts perfectly if I'm one of the unsung behind-the-scenes heroes that was very, very behind the scenes.
Well,
you didn't know about it. You people did. this is at least a third, maybe the fourth, or even more. I'm not sure at this point.
All right. Well, let me set this up. On the phone with us, so we just got done getting a report from Cinema Wasteland in Ohio from 42nd Street Pete, who you know.
Yes.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Hey, Pete.
Pete's on with us. He's going to stay on for a little while. He might jump off, though, because he's still burnt out from Wasteland over the weekend. Okay. And Todd Sheets is our producer. He's here. You know Todd Sheets. He's been a low-budget filmmaker for 20 years.
Hello.
And hey, there Todd. He is. And Peter's like, who's Todd Sheets? I never heard of him. You never heard of Shivers, man? Come on.
Come on, I have.
The Shivers. Okay, good. Daggers. I was lucky enough to go to the Daggers in 2008. That was held at the Pioneer in New York City. I had an amazing time. I was amazed at the the curating that you did and all the work that you that went into doing the short film festival. Short films don't always get the play that they deserve. So having a festival that's just short films, just horror, cream of the crop, you did it. Let's talk about Daggers 2 right now, or 4 or 5 or 6.
Yeah, well, you could say Daggers 2011. That keeps it, you know.
Oh, I like that. Well,
both
okay.
Accurate and vague at the same time.
As long as it's not Daggers 11, because then we'll say, oh, is this the 11th one? No, it's 2011. Anyway, I want to...
Next year is the 100th anniversary of Daggers. I'm already starting to promote it that
like
way
that.
Now.
Who started Daggers?
Thomas Edison.
Oh, I thought so. You know what? I had a suspicion. I didn't want to sound ignorant on the air.
It was right around the time of that first Frankenstein movie from 1910. And I think he went to the Pioneer Theater. Daggers there, and then that put it out of business, I think.
Well, that's you didn't know that's how the Pioneer Theater got their name. It was actually, you know, it was founded by pioneers, and they actually used to hold it outside on a ranch, on a sheet, on a bed sheet.
Right.
It was 99 folding chairs.
No, they sat on little, you know, like
tree stumps.
Yeah, there you go. You beat me too, you bastard.
Okay. And it was right in, you know, Alphabet City, but this year it's uptown a little bit more. I'm actually counting, Rob, the screening we did 2 years ago of Night of the Living Dead Reanimated in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I sort of stealthily billed that as a Daggers as well, because when you looked at it, Night of the Living Dead Reanimated was a series of short films.
It's like 150 short films crammed together with a little bit of like kind of old glue. Yes.
Right. And I didn't curate any of that. I forgot. Not much. You were more of a force in that.
Well, we can work out some kind of payment for that last for you hijacking Night of the Living Dead. We'll work out a system for that.
But thank you. I mean, I'm curious to hear what you thought of the small handful of films that you previewed, but basically with Daggers, and I guess you could say this about any sort of short film series, program, strands, or whatever, is that, you know, if you or anyone likes all of the films equally and enthusiastically in a program like that, I mean, there's probably something wrong with you. It would mean that you're me. The nice thing about it is that there are 12 films in it, and it changes every 5 or 10 minutes. So if you don't like the film that you're watching then, don't worry. It's just, you know, keep your eye on your stopwatch. It's over in you know, a matter of seconds. You move on to something else. And
attention.
I think that really fits with the Movies Hate You ethos, I think, because even when you start getting disappointed by one of these short films, the disappointment doesn't really – you quickly move on to your anticipation. Maybe the next one I'll really like. So I think that's something that works with short films in general, and then particularly works with horror short films, because you could just move on to the next one. Either it scares you or it creates a feeling of unease or makes you laugh if it's supposed to be funny. And if it doesn't, that's okay. It moves to the next one. It's not trying to be a romance or an epic or a documentary or any other type of genre that needs a little more time, I think.
I think it's great what you're doing. Can you tell us where it's going to be and what date so that anyone in the New York area here can get tickets online or put it on their calendar to make it out there?
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks. It's screening at the Museum of Arts and Design. And if you're not sure where that is, it's pretty easy to find. It's right in Columbus Circle. It's that big museum there at 2 Columbus Circle in Manhattan. The screening dates are Thursday, October 20th at 7 p.m. Tickets are going moderately fast for that, or so I hope. But that's actually what I've been told, because it's the evening performance. But then there's a backup matinee if you can't get into that. It's Saturday, the 22nd at 3 p.m. It's the exact same program on both days. It's just a replay. There'll be some filmmakers at each one of the events, and And the running time is a bit over 2 hours, and you got 12 movies in there. So I'm not sure. I guess, do you want a website or what else would be helpful?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what's the lineup? Like, where can I see the 12 films, or am I just going to go there and be surprised?
You could see the lineup. Hopefully, you know, major media will be covering this. You're just the first of many. I know Time Magazine has been trying to contact me. The Financial Times. No, actually, you could go.
The 700 Club's looking for you, too.
Yeah, you could go on. I don't even think actually the places that I write for cover that. So that shows you.
Yeah, but you went from, in 42nd Street Pete, he went from the pioneer to a museum. I mean, this guy has come of age here. Yeah. We were doing smut shows over there at the Pioneer. Now you're in a damn museum. You surpassed us all.
Next year, I'm planning on going back to the Pioneer, even if it's abandoned.
we're gonna break the lock and go in there and do a Daggers festival. I think that's great.
That already. You got locked in overnight. Remember?
I will tell that story on the air one day. Yes,
I know it's fun.
Sorry, Pete. Go ahead.
I got to shove off. It's a great thing what you're doing. I wish I was back to see it. I'll be back like in the middle of November if you got anything going on. But, you know, dude, keep up the good work. It's guys like you, me, and Rob and Todd that are keeping all this good stuff going. So on that happy note, let me go.
Thank you. Thanks for stopping in, 42 Pete, with the Wasteland Report. And we'll be talking to you soon. Thank you so much.
Okay, have a safe trip. Okay. Good night.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Oh, so anyway, if you go
Pete,
to...
I hope the right Pete is left. Which Pete do we have here? Wait a minute.
If you go to the website for the Museum of Arts and Design, it's actually pretty easy to remember. It's MAD Museum.
M-A-D.
M-A-D Museum as one word. MADmuseum.org. Mm-hmm. And then you could probably even find it from there by looking under films or events or whatever. But the full... You can find it a few different ways. It's madmuseum.org/events/daggers. And there you see the full lineup. We've got some.
Everybody, let him just go to the damn. You know, don't.
Yeah, I'll let you go. But
let's not dummy it down for them. Yeah. If you can't find this festival, then you don't belong at the festival. That's what I'm going to say. How about that? If you're listening right now and you can't go to that MAD website and find this festival on that website, you do not deserve to see these films, and we will send you a DVD for $19.99. Do you have any plans to do any kind of work with these filmmakers? I know, short films are traditionally, especially in horror, a springboard for directors, writers, producers, makeup people, actors, actresses to get into features. So is there any work outside of just having the festival? And I'm sure some of these films have been touring, and we'll get into how you curate it in a minute. But to kind of put this stuff together and maybe get it out there on DVD or in some kind of streaming situation where fans who aren't in New York, who can't make it here or who can't afford to go to the theater, don't feel like going out or whatever, can see these films, like a DVD of some sort.
Sure. Well, I think a couple of them, I'm not going to say what they are, but you probably could find a couple of these online. And you'd be missing the big screen experience, you know.
So you heard it first. Go online and watch the festival.
I wouldn't mind that if they all went to this site and they tried to track down these 12 films, and then they'd get so frustrated by the other 10 that they can't see, they'd probably want to come and check them out.
Exactly. Plus, watching it on YouTube, wherever you're watching, it's not going to be the same as in a theater getting that reaction. Oh, yeah. It's one of the things horror fans love the most is that shared experience that we all love. So
you're absolutely right, and you actually raise a good point. I'm not personally planning on working with these filmmakers, but it does, I'm not sure that they're planning some kind of a release of many of these. But what's interesting is how many of them, when I would contact them about these films, if they made them a few years ago and they've since moved on, it's almost like they find it hard to believe, but in a very fond way, in a very pleasantly surprised way, that someone is still interested in this now that they're being lauded for their feature films, or that they had a film and it was on the film festival circuit, but it was 5 years ago or 4 years ago or whatever it was. And I mean, to me, if these films have not been released widely, and what short films are, I mean, a couple of these I think have ended up on DVDs perhaps. Mm-hmm. One just, I think, last month, Faye Jackson's film Lump showed up on her new feature film that was just released on DVD. And there might be one or two others like that, but generally they are like, wow, thanks for taking an interest in what was kind of a transitional film for me, or just a student film, or something where I was still learning. And hey, some of these filmmakers have gone on and made these films, that made features that have been really lauded and acclaimed at film festivals and so on for the past year or two. And they're surprised that someone wants to go back and take a look at some of the earlier work they did. So there's some of that. And then some of the other films are not, they're not stepping stones. These are films that were always, you know, they're always conceived not as stepping stones, but say made by animators, where they're not going to make an entire 90-minute animated film. They're not an animation studio. They'll work a whole year, you know, spending as much time as a feature film director making a 9-minute animated film. To them, that is their, because they're doing everything.
Right.
So
right,
we have a 2 or 3 animated films in here, and some that are kind of hybrids between animated and live action. And for them, that's what they do. These are their features. So it's not a stepping stone. These are films that, you know, hope maybe they'll be on DVD someday. Maybe they won't, you know, and that's why I really did this, to provide a showcase for some of these, and also because I want to see these films. In other words, I'm a little agoraphobic, and I don't travel to film festivals all over the world. I thought if I start a festival, people will start sending their films to me.
They'll come to you.
At the very least, yeah. I'll get to watch them all instead of traveling to, you know, film festivals in Norway and, you know, places where I can't afford to go, Texas and whatever. And instead, that's nice, because I say, hey, I have my own festival. Let me check it out. So that's my selfish reason for doing it.
Well, that's okay.
And then everyone else just has to travel to Columbus Circle, and then they get to see them too.
What is the, and I don't want to ask you, you know, what's your favorite, you know, when you put them in order, is there any particular order? Do you have a standout? You know, do you start with the, do you build people up and then give them the big punch? Yeah, you're curating it in a way where it's not like, oh, this is my favorite, but you're like, okay, this is the strongest. This one, this is a good transitional piece. Let's start them with a little animation piece. Like, what's your curating process, including, contacting the filmmakers? How do you, because some of these films are older, like you're saying, these films, they, you know, they're forgotten about by even the people who made them, but you're saying, no, you know, this has some validity and people need to see it. So what's the whole process, as quickly as you can, I guess? Well, I don't want to,
there's two questions here, and I yes. should say, when you go on the website, when it says when it lists the films in the lineup, that's not the order of screening.
Right.
I'm looking at this now and I realize that they put it in alphabetical order, which is fine. But what I like to do is start slowly and end on a bang, right? Mm-hmm. You try to do it. I mean, I don't know if that's there are people who have some greater insight into this than I do, I'm sure. But that's my approach, is start slowly. So we're starting with The Other Gods by animator Mike Boaz. You probably know him from, again,
sure,
Night of Living Dead Reanimated. It's great. This is a silent film in the 1920s style, you know. And it's made as if it were made when Lovecraft were still alive. So start with that. It can't get much more low-key than a silent film. But it really clues people in, because it's a whole Lovecraftian. It clues them into the feeling of the evening. Just as the hero of that film is on an exploration for the other gods, the darker gods, the gods of horror, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of what the evening is about. And then I end with, or I should say the program ends with, I'm not doing anything really, but the program ends with.
You're pushing the button, aren't you? You're pushing the play button.
I guess. No, I'm not even doing that. It's The Legend of Beaver Dam, which has been this remarkable film that's won awards over the last year and played at Sundance and all these other places, because it's only 12 minutes long, but it kind of combines – in 12 minutes, it's a more satisfying slasher film, comedy, and musical than most other feature films at that length. And so, and right before that, there's the 2008 film by Jason Eisner, who did Hobo with a Shotgun, called Tree Bench, which last played in New York, I think, about 3 years ago. So I try to end with sort of like the big crowd-pleasing one. So you go out on a high note, and then in between, that's that hit-or-miss section where, you know, some of them might be a little too low-key, others are going to be too gory for people. And it's a real, you know, melting pot of different approaches to horror.
When you said, I figured you had given me a little sneak peek of three of the short films, and one of them was Legend of Beaver Dam, which I can't give enough praise. I said to myself, I hope I'm sure he's ending with this one. I know it. I know this is the closer right here.
Right.
What a fun movie that, like you said, it's a throwback to slasher films, but it's not. I mean, it's really, really, really self-conscious in the best possible way.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. The other ones, Adder's Bite was one, and Beating Hearts was the other that you showed me.
Right.
But, once I saw Legend of Beaver Dam, I was sold. I'd love to see that with an audience.
Great. There's that. There's also Next Floor by Denis Villeneuve, which a lot of people say is one of their favorite short films ever. I mean, I think it's won like 10 or 20 different awards or more from around the world. And I think that's one where, you know, if I had to say there's a few here that everyone will be, you know, tickled by. That's one of the three or four. And then the other ones, that's fine. You can't choose 12 films that everyone is going to love. It would be
not only
be impossible, but why would you even attempt it? And so things like The Adder's Bite, and then also Beating Hearts, you know, people might scratch their head at The Adder's Bite or even Beating Hearts. But that's all right. You have a few movies that people can talk about afterwards and debate and all that good stuff, and treat it like a mini festival. You know, have differences of opinion. That's fine.
And how many of the 12 filmmakers would you say are coming out? Will they be doing Q&As? Is there any time for that? And how does that usually, you play a film and then there's a Q&A, but with 12 films, what's the how do you don't stop this film and then say, oh, this 4-minute film was by this person, let's ask them some questions.
Right. No, that's a good point. I mean, at least four of the at least three are confirmed, and maybe even four of them will be in attendance. I mean, no one is flying in from, you know, the UK or Israel or Tasmania or some of these other places that are represented. But we are having folks fly in from, you know, Canada and a couple from Canada and from elsewhere in the States and so forth. So that's nice. And
just give it time, Peter. You're going to be flying people in from all over the world for this.
But speaking of Beaver Dam, Jerome Sable should be there, as well as a few members of the cast and crew. And again, Beating Hearts, Matthew Garrett should be there. So there'll be a small handful. More might show up. I'm hoping that at least they get to I don't know that there'll be time for a Q&A afterwards. But I mean, I'm hoping they at least get to sort of greet the audience or maybe intro the film at the beginning. But they're all shown as one continuous reel, in other words. There's not really a break between them. And maybe there should be, but, you know, right now they're all kind of crammed into that 2-hour to 2.5-hour slot right now. So I could always fit in future years and figure out how to make it more festival-like, you know.
Yeah, but definitely right now, don't rethink it. I think that's fine. I think people can handle that.
Cool. Well, thank you. I mean, I'm only disappointed because I had all these other films to talk about for October, but maybe you'll have me back at some other point.
You know, Todd can correct me if I'm wrong. I think we started a little bit late, so we do have a couple minutes.
We have a couple extra.
Yeah, there's a couple extra minutes here, Peter, if you want to stick around. I would like to get your picks because you're really one of the few people. We all try to keep on top of everything that's happening, but you're one of the few people I know that knows about stuff months before it's out here. And
My goodness, I think you're out.
As a, as a writer for Room Org and several other publications, you have a little your finger on a little bit more of the pulse than most of us of what's happening in horror. Before we get into that, though, I just want to repeat it. It's Daggers Festival of Short Horror Films, Saturday, October 22nd, 3 p.m. That's one showing. That's the second showing, right?
The one on the 22nd is the second showing.
That's the second showing. So that's at Saturday, October 22nd, 3 p.m.
Yep.
And the one before that is the 20th, right?
At 7 p.m., exactly.
At 7 p.m. So, you know, if you're a day person or a night person, everything is set up here. That's at the Museum of Arts and Design.
Got it.
Okay. And you're going to – what's the address? I'm sure you know it by heart now. I don't know the
address. I believe it's 2 Columbus Circle.
Okay.
It's right. It's its own building in Columbus Circle, so you can't really miss it at the south side of Columbus Circle if you know New York.
And if you're in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, you want to go there, just go to madmuseum.org
and
check on the calendar, get your tickets, meet Peter, bother him, ask for his autograph, and that's it. We'll move on to let's hear, because you're an active journalist in horror and other subjects as well. I don't want to pigeonhole you as just horror, because I'd like to hear some of your picks about non-horror too, because this is not a horror show, but we love horror here and we will always talk about it. What's happening now? What can we look forward to that's coming up?
Oh, I don't know, because movies hate you. So they do.
They come out whenever they want. by the way, I have to plug, I haven't done it enough. This show is sponsored by bmovie.com, which, Peter, you may or may not know. It's an eclectic array of DVDs. It's a retail site where you can go buy weird, oddball, independent films, sometimes mainstream films. Like this month, Bad, Andy Warhol's Bad just came out through them. There's a double feature, Billy the Kid vs. Dracula. And Jesse James meets Frankenstein's daughter. If you're not familiar with those, I think everyone is. I mean, are you familiar with those, aren't you, Peter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just got to say, this other movie they sent me is called, I haven't watched it, Moist Fury. And I don't even want to
know that.
Yeah, no. And so you shouldn't. That's what I mean. That's how obscure and independent the stuff is on bmovie.com. And they're nice enough to send us stuff to review. And, you know, check them out. And we'll move on to what else is coming new, more mainstream, I assume. We're going to talk about some horror and cult stuff. So, good. Throw some names. What's coming up?
What's funny is, I mean, you frame this as my picks. And I wasn't joking. Like a lot of – I don't see a lot of the studio releases for, you know, that are for October, November. They usually don't interest me that much, usually because I'm pretty busy anyway. But I do make an effort to see, you know, some of the other horror releases and genre releases. And it's really been a case of, you know, I wasn't joking, of movies hate you, where I've gone in and I've seen, you know, so much sort of, you know, semi-greatness or things that get me excited for, you know, me or exhilarated for 10-minute stretches, 20-minute stretches, and then somehow I walk out kind of shaking my head and getting that feeling of movies hate you. I mean, one good example is the sequel to The Human Centipede, which I just I think they only had like one screening in New York last week. Maybe they've got more coming up that I just covered for Room Org.
Is that Human Millipede? Is that the sequel? Is that the name?
It's called Human Centipede 2 Full Sequence. And he's a talented filmmaker, and I interviewed him once. He's a nice guy and all that, and it's in black and white. There's a lot to like about this film. It's very clever because it frames it. It gets away from the whole idea of, well, how do you make a sequel? Well, this one, the protagonist of this is a fan of the first movie. Whole meta level that's very clever, but then, you know, the key thing here is this is how I look at movies hate you. It's all a matter of knowing what your expectations are, and the filmmaker knowing what genre and therefore what audience he's making the film for. So in other words, with Human Centipede 2, definitely go see it as an exploitation flick, but don't see it as a horror movie, because it's just kind of silly and even kind of lame as a horror movie. But
I think
as a comedy or exploitation flick, if you're a fan of that, then it might be worth your money.
I think we talked about the first one when it came out. It plays out more like a detective story, not so much horror as well. I think that was the conversation you and I had at one point.
Oh, probably. Yeah, I think that's probably what I said to you. And ironically, this one is a little bit different because that one was a little bit too realistic. Like it had the cops coming in and was like a thriller. And this one totally plays out like a madman's fantasy. So there's no element of really being afraid for anyone because the victims are just these meat puppets. You know what I mean? At his disposal. So that's one film that might be interesting, but I can't wholeheartedly recommend by any means. Another one, just and then I'll end it after this because we might not have time, is the new Almodovar film, The Skin I Live In, which is opening also in October and is also screening at New York Film Festival. And, you know, I love Almodovar, and I love even the dark films like Talk to Her. I especially love those. And Bad Education.
What I've read about this.
What have you read?
Controversy. It sounds like a really sick plot. And a doctor turning someone into, giving somebody a sex change against their will, all kinds of
right. Well, that's gross, a spoiler right there. Yeah, I mean, I hope you're
That was in the news. I'm not trying to spoil. I didn't see it, but
but you're braver than I am. I wasn't going to say that. I was
well, someone
say
spoiled it for me. You know, isn't
a gore scientist? I was going to leave it vague. You know, so
okay, it's a mad scientist movie. Is it a gore film? Is it a horror film?
Well, it's a mad scientist film. It can either fall there, it could fall in science fiction, I guess, but it really takes pains to situate itself more within horror because there's the whole theme of, in the first act, he is, committing what you might call crimes against science. In other words, the other surgeons and doctors and researchers are saying, you really shouldn't be dabbling in this. It really evokes the archetypal Frankenstein theme of the maverick, researcher, scientist who is somehow going against what science should be about. And then in the second act, it has much more pulpy horror stuff, meaning, there's a revenge plot and there's a captive that's kept in a dungeon and there's mutilation and there's all the stuff that you were just talking about. But it doesn't really hold together as horror because there's never one monster that you're afraid of, and there's never one hero that you're rooting for. And I don't like to be too formulaic about that, but in this case, the horror elements seem to be rushed through in that he was just sort of touching base with them stylistically to move on to the cool or what he thought, the cool psychosexual elements of it. So that's my take on it. It's beautifully made and shot and all that, but I don't think it'll please the art house crowd or the horror crowd, but would be mildly interesting to both of them.
And everyone dies at the end. You're a tough critic, Peter, but you're one of the best, and thank you very much for coming on. We're out of time. Check out Daggers, madmuseum.org, if you're in the New York City area. Peter, I'm going to talk to you soon. Offline, and thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on. Movies Hate You, sponsored by bmovie.com.
Thank you so much, Rob. Thank you. Bye, Todd.
Anytime.